Welcome to the Neurology Live Mind Moments podcast. Tune in to hear leaders in neurology sound off on topics that impact your clinical practice. I'm your host, Marco Meglio, editor with Neurology Live. In this special episode of Mind Moments, Dr. Amal Starling, Associate Professor of Neurology at the Mayo Clinic College of Medicine, joins us to discuss the INFUSE real-world study evaluating intravenous eptinezumab in adults with migraine who previously found one or more CGRP preventive therapies ineffective. In this episode, Starling breaks down how clinicians should interpret the magnitude of the response seen in this high-burden population, including early and sustained reductions in monthly headache days and improvements in patient-reported outcomes such as good days and PGIC. She also discussed why intravenous administration and consistent bioavailability may contribute to these results, how the data could influence treatment sequencing in clinical practice, and what future studies are needed to move migraine care closer to precision medicine. Let's dive in.
The INFUSE study, it's an ongoing study, a 12-month real-world U.S. effectiveness study evaluating the efficacy of IV eptinezumab in adults living with migraine who have found at least one or more anti-CGRP preventive treatment for migraine ineffective. And so this includes prior trials of preventive monoclonal antibodies, as well as gepants for the prevention of migraine. In addition, in this real-world study, it's important to emphasize that not only did this population find at least one or more CGRP-targeted preventive treatment option ineffective, they also had a high burden of disease. The vast majority of these individuals had chronic migraine. And even beyond that, the monthly headache day burden at baseline was quite high at about 20 monthly headache days. So this is a population of patients who has a high burden of disease. And in fact, as we enrolled, we found that 55% of the individuals enrolled in the study actually had found three or more CGRP-targeted treatments that were ineffective prior to initiating IV eptinezumab. So again, it's a population with a high burden of disease, and it's a population who has tried a lot of different medications, including several of the CGRP-targeted preventive treatment options. And so we really want to know is in this population, in the real world, is IV eptinezumab effective? And we really found that there was a quite early as well as sustained benefit with IV eptinezumab, looking at a 44% of the cohort that achieved 50% reduction in monthly headache days, 26% of the population achieving a higher level of monthly headache day reduction of 75%. And then my other favorite thing about this study is we really focused on patient-centered outcomes, looking at good days per month, looking at the patient reported, the patient PGIC, the patient global impression of change, which are very patient-centric, and finding that those endpoints were also very positive in this study, even early as 7 days after initiation of IV eptinezumab. So early, meaningful, sustained benefits with IV eptinezumab.
Oh, the results are really awesome. And it's cool that we're starting to see some trials and some analyses like these and, you know, kind of, you know, obviously switching off from some therapies that weren't working before this. So I'm curious, Dr. Starling, you know, when you guys had gotten the results and you're looking over the data amongst you and your colleagues, what were some of the reasons as to why we feel as though that some patients are starting to perform better on eptinezumab as they make this switch? Just talk a little bit about some of the reasoning behind this and what some of the hypotheses were.
So, of course, IV eptinezumab is the only infusion CGRP targeted therapy for the prevention of migraine. And the fact that it is an infusion really sets it apart because it reaches 100% bioavailability at the end of the infusion. So not only does that allow for individuals to have the full amount of the medication and the potential efficacy of this medication immediately after the infusion, and we see that with this reduction in improvement in symptoms, improvement in PGIC, and improvements that we see as early as 7 days, in this study. And in prior studies, we've seen improvement even earlier on, even the day of the infusion. And again, that really correlates with the fact that this is an infusion and it reaches that 100% bioavailability very immediately. The other thing, too, is that with subcutaneous administration and with oral administration of medications, there is patient-to-patient variability in the amount of absorption of that medication, as well as the speed of that absorption. Whereas when it is an infusion, it really takes away that patient-to-patient variability in absorption because it is an infusion and it is achieving 100% bioavailability in every individual. So it's very consistent amongst patient to patient. And I think that those things make a huge difference and really sets it apart, and why it has these early effective sustained benefits.
Oh, it's really interesting to hear it. So I'm curious, obviously you're a clinician yourself, you obviously treat patients. So what do you feel as though are the clinical implications of a study like this? And, sometimes obviously, we try not to overblow too much of these trials, but, is this something that could have some significant downstream effects on clinical care itself?
One of the things that I like to emphasize to my patients about this study, and I'm already talking about this study with my patients, is really just this shift that we've had to more patient-centered outcomes. And I love that I can take data and translate it directly to patients and talk about good days and talk about being much improved or very much improved, rather than talking about symptom burden and headache days. This shift to positive psychology is really important, and it really is our bread and butter in cognitive behavioral therapy and the non-medication approaches at managing chronic disease. So that's one piece that I really love about this study and other studies that are helping us shift that identity for our patients who are living with the chronic disease of migraine. The other thing is that, one of the ways that I think about this data for IV eptinezumab is it is a robust, it is a fast, and it is a sustained, it has sustained effects. And so, it being such a robust treatment option, I think about a lot of our studies and other neurologic diseases, such as multiple sclerosis, where the shift has really moved to using very effective, very robust therapies early on in the disease process to really dampen the severity of the disease quickly. And I think about that we're moving into that paradigm in migraine now, and we need to use very robust, very effective therapies as early on as we can in the migraine disease process to really dampen down that disease severity and reduce that burden of disease. So, for my clinical practice and the conversations that I'm having with patients, I'm really moving towards the use of IV eptinezumab earlier on in the sequencing or the timing of treatment options, because I want to get a robust, effective therapy as early as I can to reduce that disease progression. In the past, we used to kind of try therapies, then we would try another set of therapies, and we're hoping that these therapies will become effective for the patient as we continue to kind of elevate the robust effectiveness of the therapies. But I really want to try to turn that paradigm shift around and get people effective, robust therapy as early as possible.
We're going to take a quick break from our conversation with Dr. Starling to keep you up to date on the latest developments in neurology. Welcome to the Neurology News Minute. Here's what you may have missed since our last episode. First, on March 2nd, Genentech reported positive data from its pivotal Phase 3 FENhance study, demonstrating that investigational fenebrutinib met its primary endpoint in reducing annualized relapse rate against teriflunomide, a previously approved therapy for multiple sclerosis. Additional analyses are undergoing to better understand the findings, including some notable safety observations. Next up, in recent news, Praxis Precision Medicines announced two new drug application submissions, one for ulixacaltamide in essential tremor and one for relutrigine in SCN2A, SC8A developmental epileptic encephalopathies. While no PDUFA date was set for either therapy, we expect to hear a decision on these agents in the coming months. And lastly, newly announced top-line data from the Phase 3 ADAPT Oculus trial showed that efgartigimod, marketed as Vyvgart, met its primary endpoint, demonstrating significant improvements in patients with ocular myasthenia gravis. Based on these data, Argenx is planning to submit a biologics license application to the FDA to expand efgartigimod's label in ocular myasthenia gravis. For more information about these stories, head to neurologylive.com, or you can check out the corresponding link in the show notes. And now, back to our conversation with Dr. Starling.
Yeah, I know the community has obviously also been asking for that kind of paradigm shift over the last couple of years. I know there was the consensus paper that came out a little while ago or a couple of years ago about trying to get some of these therapies more as first-line treatments and less of the kind of second and third options for these patients. Dr. Starling, you also, you know, you touched on the kind of patient-reported outcomes specifically a couple of times throughout our conversation. So, you know, in your opinion, as someone who's led clinical trials, who's led phase three studies, obviously had a hand in a lot of the therapeutic development for some of these migraine treatments. How can we continue to evolve migraine trials going forward and ensure that we are applying all of the correct endpoints to really kind of capture how patients are feeling and what these treatments are actually doing on a day-to-day basis?
Such a good question and such a loaded question, because that involves us being able to influence the FDA as well, right? But I do think that it is our responsibility to continue to publish this data with very patient-centered outcomes and really elevate the importance of the patient voice. And a lot of people will say, well, you know, monthly headache days is the endpoint that we should always be using. What is this good days? And the reason that people have this concern about good days is, especially in these real-world studies like the REVIEW study and the INFUSE study, good days is defined by the patient. What is a good day to them? And I love it, but other people struggle with it. And the reason that people struggle with it is because it is defined by the patient. The reason that I love it is because then it is inclusive of migraine and all of its symptoms. We all say that migraine is not just a headache, and that migraine and headache is just one of the symptoms of migraine, but that the sound sensitivity, light sensitivity, motion sensitivity, the nausea, the vomiting, the brain fog, that all of these factors will result in a good day or a not so good day, or a day where someone has function and capability versus a day where someone has less function and disability. And so I think it's really going to take a cultural change within our space. And it starts with real world data, right? So if we continue to show real world data that, number one, is using these patient centered outcomes like good days, like the patient global impression of change, and then we're able to also correlate and associate that with, look, it's matching with the more validated or more established endpoints, such as looking at monthly headache days, looking at other disability scales. And if we can show that it correlates, it's going to start building confidence in these patient-centered outcomes. And we need to continue to put these posters out, present, and publish these manuscripts, really elevating these patient-centered outcomes. And then I'm hoping that as we continue to do this, then in designing trials, these will not be just exploratory endpoints, but eventually become secondary endpoints. And I really dream about the day that they will be elevated to actually being potentially primary endpoints. But that's going to take continuous publication of these data, presentation of it, talking amongst our colleagues, and then eventually talking with the FDA about the importance of this. There's a lot of push for a lot of these patient-centered outcomes with other types of funding mechanisms like PCORI studies, which really elevates the patient voice. So, you know, using those funding mechanisms to create patient-centered studies will also be helpful. It's going to take a lot of work on our end, but responsibility that we really have to elevate the patient voice in these type of diseases.
Yeah, absolutely. We owe it to patients for sure. And it's going to be interesting to see, where the research goes over the next couple of years. Unfortunately, like you mentioned, that the FDA and the government doesn't tend to budge unless they do see some concrete data, obviously replicated over and over again. Dr. Starling, I have one last question for you. obviously this type of study kind of works towards the concept of precision medicine, which a lot of people talk about, and it's kind of a hot topic buzzword, I guess, in neurology right now. But what other types of studies do you envision that we need to continue to try and get creative with to further kind of answer questions about some of these CGRPs? We know how effective they are, but like you mentioned, some patients, don't perform well with certain therapies. So how can we continue to kind of crack the code and answer more of these questions going forward?
Yeah, that's a great question. So of course, precision medicine or individualized medicine is where we can identify a priori, before they even try medications, which one is going to be effective for them, which one is not going to be effective for them, which one might result in side effects. And that's the ideal situation so that we don't have patients undergoing this trial and error process. And right now, the vast majority of that decision making is coming from the characteristics of the medication itself rather than the characteristics that the patient has themselves. So, like we just talked about with eptinezumab being an infusion therapy, reaching 100% bioavailability. And the benefit of this, even from an individual perspective, is we're bypassing those individual variances of how absorption of medications are made because we're going directly to an infusion. However, it is really the holy grail of all of medicine for us to be able to use patient characteristics, including genetics and clinical characteristics, maybe imaging characteristics, laboratory studies, to really be able to identify which patient is going to benefit from which option. And that will become even more important as we continue to develop additional novel therapeutics that are targeted. And those things are fortunately coming down the pipeline with the PACAP targeted therapies. And so we need to continue to develop large databases and collect genetic DNA information, imaging studies, laboratory studies, all of these clinical characteristics. And this is where we can use AI to develop predictive modeling to see if we can identify those patients who are going to benefit. I will say that what we have found, at least in the real-world studies with IV eptinezumab, is we've really found that these individuals that have a high burden of disease, who have found other therapeutics ineffective, seems to be the ones that are responding quite well to eptinezumab, as well as other patients that were in the initial registrational studies. And so, at least based on the real-world data that we have, as well as the registrational studies, the phase three studies that we have with eptinezumab, that a large number of individuals with migraine, including those with a high burden of disease, seem to be responding to IV eptinezumab. So we can use that data to provide these options earlier on in the medication timeline for our patients living with migraine, but really looking forward to having big data analysis and predictive modeling to identify which targeted treatment options are going to be helpful for which targeted population.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Neurology Live Mind Moments podcast. To support the show, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And as always, for more neurology news and expert-driven content, visit neurologylive.com.